Last time, on Tales of the Ironlands, Kalaira Sophie's daughter faced the consequences of her actions in the Skaran tribe. Rolith, the leader of the tribe, had tried to use Kalaira to kill a Hollow who had risen from the spirit of Huron, Rolith's father, whom Rolith poisoned in order to take control of the tribe. When Kalaira instead revealed Rolith as the murderer, Rolith ordered Kalaira killed by three archers, Jaska, Ilmari, and Axel. Rolith was slain by the Hollow, and Kalaira killed the three archers. The next day, the tribe selected a new leader in a duel between two candidates. The loser of that duel, Ainari, must leave the tribe. The winner, Kala, is now the leader of the Skaran. In reparation for the deaths of the three archers, Kala ruled that Kalaira needed to conduct a rite of leave-taking for each of them, according to elven tradition. One by one, Kalaira visited the homes of the slain archers, ritually washed their hands and feet, and declared that the fight was fought honorably, and asked their spirits for forgiveness. Each in turn granted it, and so Kalaira made peace with her slain. And that is where we're going to pick up. Kalaira sleeps not well, it must be said. She has many troubles weighing on her mind, and her spirit is at +2 at the moment, so she's feeling a little down. In the morning, she wakes up early. Although she feels as though she could sleep forever, at the same time, sleep evades her. In the gray light of dawn, she pulls herself up, sitting on the bedroll that has been left for her here in her room, and she is going to tend to her wounds, because her health is also at +2. Alright, I have a weak hit with a 6 plus 2 is 8 versus a 2 and a 10. Her supplies drop to 0 as she uses up the last of her supplies. I must mark unprepared. And because of Herbalist, I am going to take +1 health on a weak hit here. So that raises her health from 2 up to 5. Kalaira is feeling much better after spending some time carefully cleaning and tending to her wounds. They are still stiff and sore, and it'll be a while before she really feels like herself again, but she is no longer actively wounded. She is recovering. "I'll need to get some more supplies before I leave," she says. "I wonder if I could get some food around here. I'm out." Once she begins to hear the noise of people moving around outside, Kalaira rises. She's a little easier in her mind about her welcome here in the village now that she has made peace with her slain. And so she opts not to take all of her gear with her. She leaves her pack in the room where she has been staying. She does take her sword, not wanting to be too far removed from it. Wandering outside, she sees that the village is beginning to waken and go about their daily business. There has been much drama and many changes in the last few days, and yet life goes on. Kalaira wanders around looking for someone who speaks her language. most of them don't. But after a while, she makes her way to the central tree. There are guards outside, as is apparently common, and she knows to leave her sword outside, even though she still doesn't like it very much. Going inside, she discovers that both Kala and Varys are there. They look up as she enters, and Kala says, "Ah, our guest has arrived. Good morning, Kalyra, Sophie's daughter." "Good morning," Kalyra says. "Varys was just telling me that the pyres have burned out." "I see," says Kalyra. "I don't suppose... could I get some breakfast somewhere around here? I'm out of supplies." Varys says, "Yes, I can assist you with that. I was about to go eat myself. If you would like to come with me?" "Yes, please," says Kalyra. "Come back and speak with me later," says Kala. "All right," says Kalyra. Varys takes Kalyra out of the central hut. She retrieves her sword on the way back, buckling the belt and scabbard about her waist once more. And the two of them move through the village, high above the floor of the forest. Varys lives in a... it's a room... like most of the other rooms, it is a room which is on the built in the branches of a tree. It is fairly close to the center of the village, possibly, because Varys is a fairly high-status elf. It's also a little larger than some of the other rooms that Kalyra has seen. They discover Belisant is busy rolling up her bedroll. She apparently stays at Varys' house, which makes sense as she is his apprentice. "Good morning. Is it done?" says Belisant. "Everything went fine," says Varys. "Shall we have a little breakfast?" Varys looks weary. He has been up most of the night, tending the pyres of the slain men. "Certainly," Belisant says. Setting aside the bedroll, Belisant lifts a panel out of the floor. Kalyra is a little surprised at this. She hadn't noticed that the floors of these places are built to contain storage units underneath them. And reaching down within them, Belisant pulls out what looks like a clay mug, or a pitcher, I should say, a few bowls, and proceeds to produce essentially something like cereal. And the three of them sit on the floor of the house. It has no chairs or anything. None of them have any chairs. And they eat cereal out of clay bowls with spoons that have been made of smooth wood. It's a light breakfast, but Kalyra feels quite refreshed afterwards. "Thank you," Kalyra says. "That was good." And Belisant and Varys nod at her. "All right. Now can you tell me about primordials?" Varys says, "Why don't you speak with Kala, and I will get a quick nap, and then come back here, and I will tell you." "All right," says Kalyra. A little frustrated. This is the third time she has been put off in this. "Relax. By the end of the day, we will have told you what you need to know. I'm just a little I'm not thinking entirely clearly at the moment. I've been up all night. I understand, says Calera. I will go speak with Kala, and then I will come back here. All right, says Varys. I will go with her, says Belisant. And so Belisant and Calira leave Varys' house as he is there unrolling his bedroll and trying to get a quick nap in. The two of them make their way back to the central chamber and enter, Calira once again leaving her her sword outside. I am here, Calira says. You wished to speak with me? Yes. I am told that you made your peace with all three of the archers, Jaska, Ilmari, and Axel. Yes, says Calira. It was intense. She did well, Belisant says. Very good, says Kalar. I'm not sure that I understand why you came here in the first place, Calira Sophie's daughter, says Kala. And so, Calira reiterates the story once again of how her father has been taken by an Earth Primordial who appears to be trying to convert him into another Earth Primordial, and she's trying to figure out what's going on so she can save him. You lead an interesting life, Calira Sophie's daughter, says Kala. And once you have learned what you need to know, you will depart? Oh, yes, says Calira. I wish I was gone already. I don't know how long I have. Very well. Belisant, you may tell Varys that it is my instruction that the two of you assist her in this matter to the best of your ability, says Kala. Thank you, says Calira, and I'm going to make a progress move on the vow to set things right for the Skaren. It is at 8 out of 10 progress. I can't really think of anything else that really needs to be done on it. So, here we go. Fulfill your vow. I have a strong hit. It is a 4 and a 7 versus 8. She has set things right for the Skaren. Much has changed since you came here, Calira Sophie's daughter, says Kala. And yet, I feel as though the tribe is now on a more even footing than it was when you came. We understand how it is that Huron met his death. His murderer has been punished. His death avenged. We have a new leader. Myself, it seems. And the spirits of those who fell in the midst of this conflict have been set at ease. I am glad I was able to help, Calira says, although I did not always know what I was doing. It has been very interesting to stay among the Skaren and see how you live. We are glad to have had you. Though I hope you will not be terribly offended if we will also be glad to see you leave. It will take time to blunt the edges of the sorrows that have visited us in the last few days. Yes, I understand, says Calira. Go, see to your task, says Kala. And Belisant and Calira leave. And I get to mark experience and take that quest off of my sheet because it is done.
Up to 3 experience now.
I think in future I'm going to make a separate progress track worksheet for keeping track of quests specifically. I think I'd like to have those as a record of things I've done. There's only so many on the actual character sheet. I'm going to reserve those for really big long-term quests.
That did not take terribly long, Belisande says. Perhaps we should give Varys an hour or two to rest before we wake him.
I suppose, Kalyra says.
Hey, she says, where do you cook?
I mean, I know that you have meat and that you cook things. I've seen people eating, and there was that deer that was brought in, but of course there's no fires in the buildings, and would you like to see the communal kitchen?
Yes, says Kalyra.
Belisande takes her down the rope ladders to the forest floor below and walks just a couple of minutes. There's just past a slow rise in the hill, there is an area that has been smoothed out, and instead of just open forest floor, there is an area that has been made of brick or flagstone. It has no walls, but there are a series of low stone ovens with a large communal supply of wood off to one side, and there are people there busily baking bread and assorted other types of cooking. There's fire pits for roasting things, and ovens for baking things, and so on. There are even some wood tables set up where people can conduct food preparation, chopping vegetables and cutting meat, and all of the other bits and pieces of steps that go into preparing a meal. The two of them get some fresh bread from one of the bakers there, a rather a rotund elven man who seems quite cheerful. He gives them slices of hot, fresh bread drizzled with honey, and the two of them sit at the edge. There are some stools that have been set there, and eat fresh bread with honey, licking the little bits of honey off of their fingers after they have finished the bread.
That was wonderful, Kalyra says.
I will be leaving as soon as I may after we've spoken with Varys, but I really need to get some supplies. I am fresh out of almost everything. Can I resupply here?
I think that given Kala's instructions that we are to assist you to the best of our ability, that can be arranged, says Belisande. And so we are going to sojourn. Here we go. Rolling at plus 3 because it's a heart roll.
I have a 9, 6 plus 3 is 9, versus double 7. That's nice. Alright. I don't think I really want a twist, per se. I'm pretty much done here, I think. Because of the doubles and rolling so well, I think I'm going to take 3 benefits from the list, as if I were bonded with the community, even though I am not. So I am going to equip, clearing unprepared, and increasing supply by 1. Then I am going to provision, taking plus 2 supply. And finally, I am going to consort, taking plus 2 spirit, because my spirit was at only a plus 2, so we're up to 4 now.
Belisant takes Kalyra around the community, helping gather supplies that she might need, food, medicinal supplies primarily, and the two women talk with one another as they go along. Belisant is quite young for an elf, which means that she is only considerably older than Kalyra. But the two, for all the difference in their age in terms of years, seem to be at fairly similar stages of life. Although Belisant's life has been less troubled than Kalyra's of late. I think I'm going to try to forge a bond with Belisant. And because I just finished the quest Set Things Right for the Skaren, I get to reroll any dice. So here it is, a heart roll. I do not need to reroll any dice. I have a 9, 6 plus 3 is 9, versus a 6 and an 8, so that is a strong hit. I'm going to mark a bond here. Is there some place to track exactly who I've bonded to? Someplace? I'll just make a note somewhere here. Okay, so mark the bond. I get plus 1 spirit and plus 2 momentum. Spirit is now at 5. Momentum is up to 7, which is nice. It is heartening talking with this young woman of the elves. Kalyra feels her mind much more at ease for having had someone to talk with for a while. The two even wind up laughing about a few things. It's the first time in a long while that Kalyra has had anything to laugh about. And it is balm for the soul. All right, I think I have what I need in order to leave once we are done here, says Kalyra. It's been a few hours of preparations. She says, shall we go and speak with Varys now? Yes, it is definitely time, says Belisant. The two of them make their way back to Varys' house, where they discover that he is already up and gone and has left a note indicating that he is gone to the Cromlech. What's a Cromlech? Says Kalyra. The circle of stones that you saw the other day, that is the Cromlech. Oh. Well, let's go. They make their way down once more. Living in this place must give you really great leg muscles, always climbing up and down. Woof, says Kalyra, as she reaches the forest floor down below. And the two of them walk through the forest along a path which has been marked with ferns, as is apparently the elven way. They come to the Cromlech, where they find Varys once again seated, apparently meditating in the center of these circle of stones. And once again, Belisant claps twice to gather his attention. Enter the circle, he says. And the two of them come in. Are you ready now? Says Kalyra. Yes, says Varys. Please, have a seat. And the two of them sit down. What do you know about primordials? Says Varys.
Not a great deal, Kalyra says. They are nature spirits. They are terribly dangerous if fought. She says a little ruefully. I
honestly don't know a great deal more than that.
Hmm. Well then, we should bring you up to speed with some basics. Belisande, he says, I would like you to recite the tale of the Mother's Balance.
And Belisande nods her mask and says,
In our language?
No, of course not. Translate it into her language, says Varys. Oh. Consider it a test, says Varys. And Belisande straightens slightly and says,
All right. I may speak slowly so that I have time to think about the words. I want to make sure this is right.
She sits straight, she rests her hands on her knees, and then she begins to speak.
Before time began, the world lay in stasis, light and dark, matter and void. All things lay in perfect symmetry, changeless, having neither a beginning nor an end. This we know. And yet, the world was incomplete, hollow. It could not see or know itself, but it wanted to. And from this desire was born time and perception, as portions of the world separated themselves in order to look back upon what they came from. No one piece of the world could see and comprehend all of it. And so they were forced to experience the world in sequence, in time, even as we do now. These first beings began to explore the world, seeing and experiencing it with joy in their hearts. But their passage through the world changed it, made it different than it was before. One walked through the lands, and in its footsteps grass and trees and flowers and all of the plants rose from the soil in glorious profusion. From among them crept out the rabbits and deer and all the creatures of the land, and we call him the Green Father. One took to the skies, and encompassed the world with wings so broad that they cast whole mountains into shadow. And with every wing beat, sparrows and dragonflies and hawks and every flying creature fell into the sky and took to their wings for the very first time. And we call her the White Mother. One swam through the seas, and from its wake swirled forth fish and whales, and even the mighty krakens that haunt the deep. And we call her the Blue Sister. One burrowed deep into the heart of the world, and marveled at the flames that dwell there. And he brought forth no creatures, or if he did, then we know them not, for their homes are too hot for us to bear. And we call him the Red Brother. But there was one more of the first, one more who came of the world itself. This one came last, and found that the land and the seas and the air and even the heart of the world had already been claimed. And so it took to the darkness above, to the empty spaces high up, where it could see so much more. But what it saw was that the plants were choking one another. It saw that the animals were too many, that the seas had grown thick with fish, and that the skies were darkened with the wings of the birds. It saw that the others had created too much. And so it cried out, Once we had stasis, once all was in perfect balance. Where now is that balance? Nowhere. I must restore what has been lost. And it gave its gifts to the world. Hunger, disease, violence, death. And we call her the Black Lady.
The others of the Thirst grew angry at the Black Lady. They did not like her gifts. They did not like death. And so they sought to make creatures who would live eternal, as long as they themselves might. These were the Vanhimat. You call them primordials. The Green Father made his of stone, the White Mother of air, the Blue Sister out of water, and the Red Brother crafted his of living flame. But the Black Lady simply smiled and shook her head, and then the others knew that they had failed, and that the Vanhimat would one day die like any other creature.
"She is too powerful for us," the Red Brother said. "We must admit defeat.
And perhaps she is wiser than we are. Her gifts are not without beauty in their way." And so he retreated to the Fire Deeps, accepting that the Black Lady's gifts would be part of the world. And this is why fire can cause harm so readily.
"There is no beauty in death," said the Blue Sister. "But neither can I see any way to oppose her. We are beaten."
And so, in sorrow, she dove down to her watery palace, and this is why darkness lies at the heart of the sea, and tears taste of salt. The Green Father was troubled, and cast his gaze down at the ground. But then he lifted his head and said, "No, there is a way. We have worked apart. She is stronger than any one of us. But perhaps together we can oppose her." He held his hand out to the White Mother and said, "Come, help me. Together, let us see what we can do." The White Mother smiled, for she knew what it would take. "Let me show you," she said. And they lay together. And from this union came our people, the firstborn. Then the Green Father and the White Mother passed on this blessing to the beasts of the fields and the birds of the trees, to the fish in the water, and to us, that we may find mates, and with them produce children to take our places when at last we pass from the world. And so it was that the Green Father and the White Mother between them struck a new balance. It is not a perfect balance, like the one the Black Lady remembers from before time, when nothing changed and all was still. This balance is instead an imbalance, carefully balanced. It is the wave which falls ever forward but never crashes upon the shore. It is the wind that never ceases. It is the seed that grows to a mighty tree and falls, only to become the soil that shall bear new trees. It is life in defiance of death. And that is the tale of the Mother's Balance.
"Well done," says Varys. And Bellicent ducks her head in pleasure at the praise. "All right, that was very interesting," says Kalyra. "And how is this relevant to me?"
"Now, you may have noticed," says Varys, "the Green Father and the White Mother gave the blessing of reproduction to many things, to plants, to animals, to people. But they did not give such a blessing to the Vanhimat. The Vanhimat were created, not born. They are the first made, and we," he taps his shoulder, "we elves, we are the first born. The Vanhimat do not have the option of ever having children of their own. So it seems that the Earth Primordial who has taken your father is seeking a way around that, seeking a way to create a new primordial. Perhaps it is old and knows it will die soon and wishes to have a child of its own? Or perhaps there is some other reason that it has chosen to pursue such a course of action. All right. Is this common? Has this been done before? Says Kalyra. And I'm actually going to ask the Oracle for that one. Is it common for primordials to create new primordials out of other people? I think I'm going to assign this unlikely. So here comes the Oracle roll. 23. No, it is not common. Varys shakes his head. No, it is not common. I have heard of two other instances in all of my years of studying lore. Both were elves. Both had struck some sort of deal with the primordial in question. One was an elven woman who sought out the primordials and requested their aid in a quest that she was undertaking. It is a long story, and not terribly relevant here, but the price that she paid for the primordials' aid was to be burned away and become a flame primordial. There was also an elven man, and I cannot tell you much about his story at all. All we know is that he was one of the original firstborn, born directly of the White Mother and the Green Father, who chose to join the Van Himat. We're not sure why, actually, but he became an heir primordial. He was blown away until there was nothing left of him but his breath, which became the new primordial. It was a very long time ago. I see. And Kalyra says, what do I need to do? Can I save him? In the other two instances that I have described, it was voluntary on the part of the elves. It was the outcome of a deal that they had made with the primordial. Now, considering you have said that the primordial said it had a debt, or there was a debt that must be paid, I suspect that your father must have made some kind of bargain with the primordial, and that the payment that is due is to become an earth primordial, to become like it. And can I stop it? Can I save him? The primordials have many abilities. I think that your people think of the Van Himat as simply forces of nature, unthinking, unreasoning, and it is true that they do not speak very fluently, but they are just as intelligent as you or I, and they have many powers that are beyond those that we are able to wield. I suspect that the only person who can stop the transformation is the Earth Primordial itself. I suppose the Green Father, who made the Earth Primordials, could do something about it. But although the Green Father and the White Mother are real beings who exist in the world, they are not often seen. They rarely interact directly with mortals. So I think that your best bet for
stopping this is to speak with the primordial and see if there is something that you can do to pay your father's debt. And Kalyra shivers a little. Whew. That is not an answer that I was hoping to hear, she says.
Well, that is the answer that we have to give you, says Varys.
That is my advice to you, Kalyra Sophie's daughter. Return to the Earth Primordial, this time with words of peace on your lips rather than weapons in your hands. Speak to it. Find out what it wants, and whether there is some other price that may be paid. All right. I thank you for your wisdom, she says. Is there anything else that you think I should know? Varys nods slowly.
You are death-touched. A vow to the Black Lady is a dangerous thing. It can change you.
And the Black Lady, as you may have learned, is not exactly a friend of mortals. But then again, she is not entirely evil either. For it is certainly true that if no one ever died, soon the world would be overrun with creatures. In her own way, she is part of the Mother's Balance. Be cautious in pursuing this vow of yours to bring the Rose of Light and Shadow to death.
Yes, about that, Kalyra says. I know that you've already said that you don't know anything about the Rose of Light and Shadow, but I will need to find out more about it, how to get there, what it is, where it came from. Do you know anywhere I could go to find out about that?
And we're going to ask the Oracle, does Varys know of anyone who might be able to tell Kalyra more about the Rose of Light and Shadow? I'm going to say it's 50-50, so low is no, high is yes.
31. No, I do not know of anyone personally. However, you are about to go and speak with an Earth Primordial, and as I said, although they speak slowly and ponderously, they are not unintelligent creatures, and they have existed since almost the beginning of time. Ask your questions of the Earth Primordial, and perhaps it will be able to tell you something, or at least point you to someone who can.
That is good advice. Thank you, says Kalyra.
Is there anything else? Says Varys.
One more thing. Was it you who put Rahleth's mask in my room?
And both of them sort of reel back in startlement. Someone put Rahleth's mask in your room?
Yes, I found both halves of it there. It's there now.
Varys stands up. This is most unexpected. I went looking for the halves of the mask. They were gone before we even retrieved the bodies.
Then who brought them to me? says Kyra.
I do not know,
says Varys.
This is most unexpected.
What should I do with them? Kalira says.
Wrap them in silk. I will provide a length of it. Wrap them in silk. Take them with you. I think it would be unwise to simply dispose of them. But do not touch them. Do not think of them. The snapped mask of a murderer slain by a hollow is an object of ill omen. He looks quite disturbed. This sits poorly with me.
All right. I will do that.
Tell me, says Varys suddenly. Did you touch them?
Yes, says Kalira.
What happened when you touched them, says Varys?
I heard a sound like a whisper. But when I looked, there was no one there.
If anything, Varys looks more disturbed. He says, that mask was made of ghost wood.
You are tuned to the ways of the dead. You have spoken with the Black Lady. Her mark lies on you, in your eyes. This will give you abilities to speak with the dead much more easily than others might. You are death-touched, Kalira, Sophie's daughter. Do not let that become your identity.
And I'm going to make the move advance, spending these three experienced on a new custom asset called death-touched. The first ability of this path is that Kalira gains any time she makes a move that involves speaking with or interacting with the dead or the spirits in any way, she gets to add +1 and take +1 momentum on a hit. The subsequent two abilities will be revealed as she unlocks them.
I'll keep that in mind, says Kalira. I'll try.
Good, says Varys. Remember, you may have sworn a vow to death, but she too is part of life in her way. Don't lose sight of that. Now, you should go. You have who knows how much time. Go, go.
I will see her out of the village, master, says Belisant. And,
so they leave the Cromlech. They make their way back to the village. I don't think they need to revisit the room where Kalira has been staying. She undoubtedly collected her gear, before they went to the Cromlech. Belisant takes her through the village of the Skaren to the far side, when they come to the path that leads down to the river, Belisant stops and turns to Kalira and says,
though it has only been a short time that we have known each other, Kalira, Sophie's daughter, I'm glad to have known you. I think your heart is good.
And she reaches up and she takes her mask and lifts it from her face. She's clearly very young. Her face is narrow with high cheekbones, as is common for the elves, sort of almond-shaped eyes, which are green,
and she smiles at Kalyra.
I am honored, says Kalyra.
She reaches out and rests a hand on Belisant's shoulder.
Thank you, Belisant, and I wish you and the Skaran all the best.
Thank you.
Go then, says Belisant, and may the White Mother guide your footsteps.
And with that, Kalyra turns and sets her gaze once more to the north to make her way to find the Primordial once more. I'm going to mark progress on the vow to rescue her father. Just one. I'm going to make progress on find a Kukari and learn about Primordials, bringing it to 10. I'm going to make a progress move to finish the quest Find a Kukari and Learn about Primordials, because that has been done. Strong hit, 3 and 5 versus 10 on the progress track, so I get 2 experience. And with that, Kalyra Sophie's daughter ends her time amongst the Skaran elves and returns to her quest to rescue her father. And that's what we're going to call session.